You ready?
Yeah.
You ready? All right, hold on. Here we go.
Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's episode, we're going to look back at the Super Bowl and get a little bit of the behind-the-scenes look from what went on down there in Houston. We also have an interview with softball standout Keeley Milligan for the Fighting Texas Aggies. And we are going to talk about the XFL. Because there is a documentary, a 30 for 30 out on the XFL, and we have to just revisit that glory. So, without further ado, this is the My Aggie Nation podcast. Over there, he could probably take Vince McMahon.
Oh yeah,
in a cage match. That is President Zachary Taylor.
Of course, I could take Vince McMahon. How old is he now? Like 75?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get into that later. But
dude is in great shape, by the way. He does not look like he's early 70s, maybe late 60s, early 70s, somewhere around in there. But no, he does not look like he is
no,
at that age.
No, we'll talk about that in the last segment. But first, well, okay, before we get also in the Super Bowl, I'm going to appease you because this is what you've been talking about all morning. The otter.
The otter, yes. So a friend of mine, in case you didn't know, Bryan College Station is not known for having a large otter population.
No.
And I mean, there are two different kinds. There are...
Are you now an otter expert?
There are sea otters, and then there are freshwater otters.
A freshwater otter.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this was a freshwater otter, but... A freshwater otter. But my friend found a dead otter over by the Bryan Municipal Golf Course, just laying in the road.
What?
Just, I guess, I don't
this
know
is like,
where
This
was.
Is like the true signs of global warming,
now, if you've
right?
ever if you've ever gone to Bryan Muni, you've noticed they have plenty of nutria hanging around, which are basically big beavers with rat tails.
Okay. It wasn't that?
No, it wasn't a nutria. This thing was a full-fledged otter, and I don't know if he was trying to get to the otter side of the road, but you better... It's almost, you know, otterly believable that he ended up getting hit. But
just can I turn off your mic?
No. We're going to be making otter puns all day
long.
So, I mean, you could try and find some otter person to do a podcast.
Shut
with
up, Dad. God.
I love dad jokes.
God, yeah, people on
kids.
The podcast are saying brutal. This is brutal.
I don't even have
Shut
kids
up, Dad.
I
if I could reach that mixer, I would turn you off.
Well, and he might have migrated all the way down from Canada, where he lived in Ottawa.
Shut up.
Anyway.
Before we lose everybody that's listening to us, we were at the Super Bowl. I was at the Super Bowl down there on Sunday. I was there for most of the week last week, and it is just an experience, just a whole big darn thing. Because first off, the thing that and everyone watched the Super Bowl. I assume everyone listening to this watched the Super Bowl or at least has seen highlights. So I think we're going to talk less about the actual.
What was
game.
The number? Like 111 million? Is that what it was? And that's not including streaming.
I think so.
So there was a lot.
There was a
of
lot
folks.
Of people that watched the Super Bowl. Of course, Martellus Bennett wins a ring. Drake Matthews doesn't on the other side. Martellus Bennett may or may not, probably won't go to the White House. That's all the storylines from the game. But I think it's more fascinating to see what goes on behind the scenes. And you go into watching the Super Bowl every year with this kind of understanding that it is the biggest spectacle in all of television.
Yeah.
Just across the world, just the biggest spectacle. It's just this awe-inspiring thing that should probably happen at Disney World every year, just huge. Well, when you go and actually watch it, yeah, I mean, the introductions and the national anthems and all that stuff, it's done up, but it's kind of easy to forget that it's just a football game.
Yeah.
It is a football game.
It's got all this fanfare, and obviously it feels different than a normal football game, but in the end, you got to play, and somebody's got to win.
Right, and it's, you know, and honestly, it's not that different from, I've covered, like, the Fiesta Bowl, and some of those big BCS New Year's Six type bowls. It's not really a whole lot different from that. And honestly, there, in some ways, I would argue that there might be a little bit more pageantry with the bowl games, with the traditions of schools playing, and you have your fight songs, and you have your, you know, what it's very comparable to, like, a big time bowl game, just in energy and the way that it feels in there. And it's not that much different. Now, the X factor in all this is the halftime show, and the halftime show is pretty ridiculous to watch, you know, everything. And for me, the craziest part was watching the setup, was watching, I have a, on my Instagram, I think, I posted a time lapse of them putting the stage. It took only about 5 minutes to get the whole production set up and going. And it's, it, yeah, I mean, it's crazy to watch all that behind the scenes stuff.
So, and I've wondered this too, and obviously you don't get much of a taste for it by watching it on television, but, you know, you're talking about, it seems like things are a little bit more escalated. You talked about the pageantry, you talked about the schools in a bowl game, so to speak, and you've got all the fans there that are rooting, and a lot of those folks have gone to school at those places and have followed that team. Did you get the feeling that there were a lot of true blue Patriots and Falcons fans that made this trip?
Sure.
Or is it just people that had the money that could go watch a game?
No, there was a lot of Patriots and because the one thing that they did do during the timeouts that would resemble fight songs, some of the pageantries, they had a couple of videos produced that had some celebrities in it. Like one that stands out to me was they had a Rise Up Falcons kind of rallying a video that was narrated by Samuel L. Jackson. And that got the Falcons fans screaming and cheering. And,
all these mother-licking Falcons fans on this mother-licking plane.
But, yeah, in the spaceship of a stadium. But and before the game, you know, the guys on the field who were talking over the PAs were saying, you know, how many Patriots fans? How many Falcons? And it was, I mean, a majority of the stadium. It wasn't like opening night, the media night that happened on Monday before the Super Bowl, where it seemed like there was a lot of Texans fans and a lot of people just from Houston in to watch. There was a lot of Pats fans and a lot of Falcons fans.
Because you do wonder about that, because obviously folks have to get tickets, unless they had already planned on being in the Super Bowl and had just done that and were planning on selling them at a later date. I'm sure that's what a lot of folks did. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's what a lot of Cowboys fans and Texans fans did. But, you know, it takes a lot of money to get down there, especially when you're flying from someplace like Boston. Mm-hmm. And so in order to be able to do that and find accommodations, I mean, and things, you didn't think that there would be that many, but from television.
I'm sure there's a lot of action on that secondhand ticket
market.
And
then the booing post game to Roger Goodell, you could tell there were quite a few Patriots fans.
Oh, there was. I would say there's more Patriots fans there too than Falcons fans. Just from noise level. But yeah, I mean it's nuts. And the funny part about it is, you know, I get to go and I can say that I was a part of the one of the top ranked Super Bowls, most only because it went to overtime for the first time.
There's a lot of records. I mean, Tom Brady set the single game passing record for the Super Bowl. First time it went to overtime.
Right.
There's a lot of firsts.
A lot of records. Pretty historic Super Bowl. And the funniest part about it is the entire fourth quarter and overtime, where 90% of the action of the game happened. Me and Colin Deaver over at KAGS and Brent Zornerman from the Houston Chronicle. We were all covering it. We were watched the entire fourth quarter and the overtime period in the tunnels of the stadium, just kind of off in a corner with about 50 or 60 of kind of the event staff people watching on a 26-inch TV with no sound, because we had to be down near the locker room areas for post-game stuff because there's just so many media and stuff there. So yeah, we could hear it going on behind us, but yeah, we watched the entire thing on just a small little TV deep in the bowels of NRG Stadium.
Yeah, for those who don't know, typically if you're up in a press box, or I know you guys weren't in the press box, but you're in a media area, and they'll let you know with a certain amount of time left on the ball game if you can go downstairs. And I know you guys couldn't go on the field. Usually with Aggie games, that's what we get to do, but you're automatically going to be going down because you want to catch all the players as soon as possible and get in the locker rooms. And that kind of sucks that all the great stuff, all the crazy stuff that was going on, you weren't actually out in it.
Sure. But, I mean, there was plenty of crazy stuff that happened inside. And it's funny, like the probably the most memorable moment for at least me and Uncle Brent was we were trying to figure out how to get the setup of the stadium is very different from just a normal Texans game or like the Texas Bowl when we were there in December. They have the interview rooms is basically kind of a tent they built under one of the ramps to get up. So that's where they have
interesting.
It was this kind of portable thing outside the building, and And so we were trying to figure out how to get to the locker rooms, because we were going to either interview Jake Matthews when it looked like the Falcons were going to win, or Martellus Bennett. We didn't know if they would be actually in the press conference room. So we're heading towards the media center to go ask somebody, and then we start to reach over to open the door, and it opens towards us. We kind of almost run into the people coming out, but then have to step back and hold open the door, and it's someone pushing a wheelchair, and we look down and we kind of hold open the door for this person, and he kind of goes, "Thank you," and we walk in, and me and Brent look at each other and we go, that was Elton John.
Elton John was in a wheelchair?
Elton John was in a wheelchair at the Super Bowl. And because we looked, we thought about it, and it certainly looks like him. But also, who wears round blue tinted sunglasses at 9 o'clock at night, and wearing like a purple suit?
And speaks with an English accent. Sure. In Houston.
So Sir Elton John, we held the door open.
Why was he in a wheelchair?
I don't know. Maybe it was just in getting around.
Is he okay?
We didn't ask, but. Yeah.
That's why they call it the blues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, so we'll get away from that singing.
We definitely held the door open for Elton John. So that was a highlight of the evening, but I'm just trying to, I mean, just a lot of running around. We got to go briefly into the Patriots locker room and see him passing around the trophy, because we were trying to find Martellus Bennett, and Tom Brady had already come back, and no, neither Colin Deaver nor I stole Tom Brady's jersey, so we can go and get that out of the way.
So you say, and hey,
standing outside of the Patriots locker room for as long as I did, and then going in and seeing that scene, I don't understand how someone stole that jersey.
Oh, it was an inside job. I have no doubt that it was.
It had to have been. Well, and I bet his like mom has it, and or his dad, and they're just playing a joke on him because. I saw them go into the locker room before any of the players got back into the locker room.
Well, it's no joking matter now. The Texas Rangers are involved, so the eyes of a Ranger, the unsuspecting stranger.
Walker's going to come
better
in
know
roundhouse
the truth
kick.
And yeah, he's going to go roundhouse Mr. Brady in the face. Give us back that jersey. Yeah. Overall, at least watching it from television, obviously it was great. I was a little upset, though, that Lady Gaga did not sing Edge of Glory. Because that's my favorite Lady Gaga song.
Lady Haha.
Lady Haha.
Yeah.
She started, and was the jump, was that pre-recorded?
See, okay, it's interesting. I think it is. I've kind of gone back to try to investigate, but they opened the roof, and, you know, all the people that were from Houston, the Houston media folks, were just flabbergasted that they actually opened the roof.
I've never gone to a game there with the roof open.
Apparently, they haven't opened it in like 5 years or something like that. But we see her come on the screen in the stadium, and so we're kind of trying to, because we can't see where, you know, she is on the roof from where we're sitting, and so we're kind of trying to look, and then all of a sudden she does that kind of like, you know, jump into the stadium, as like, you can't see my air quotes, but I'm doing air quotes, and we then since we didn't know which side of the roof she was standing on, we didn't know which side she would have jumped in on, and so all of a sudden she appeared on the stage. Now, I was videoing this with my phone, and I kind of went back, and to me it seems like she might have swung in from the suite level, because that's when a spotlight first came on her.
Wait, so you didn't see her in the air?
No, I never saw her in the air.
So she just appeared on the stage.
But I didn't know where to be looking. I didn't know where to look, so I could have been not looking at the right spot. When I went back and looked at my video, there definitely is a spotlight that appears from about kind of the suite level in between the, you know, the second deck and the upper deck. Yeah. It kind of looks like she kind of swung in from
there.
Well,
even if it was pre-recorded, it wouldn't have made a difference. But if it was live, too bad you missed the drones.
Yeah.
The drones
I think it was pre-recorded.
The drones
though.
Really stole the show.
Yeah,
that
the drones
pretty,
were pretty
That
cool.
was pretty sweet.
And someone on the Periscope here threw in there that they thought that Lady Haha lip synced the whole thing, and I don't think she did either
because when you saw her at the piano,
yeah,
she was singing.
Well, and twice. One, and I don't know if this came across like this on the TV, but it definitely seemed like when she was dancing, she was getting ahead of her music. So you wouldn't have the lip syncing get ahead of it; would be in sync with the instrumentation. Yeah. And secondly, at the end, she was dancing around and like didn't sing into the mic. and was like, it was supposed to be when she was singing, and she wasn't singing into the mic. She was singing, but not holding the mic to her face.
And there
was
a couple times where she sounded kind of out of breath
in the stating. Yeah, so I certainly don't think there was lip syncing going on. I mean, there could have been for parts, but there was definitely parts too.
Say what you will about Lady Gaga, but she seems like she's one of those performers that goes all out or nothing. I mean, yeah. She gives 110% every day.
I mean, we can go the route of looking back at some of the Super Bowls in the past couple of years. It was good, and musically, she's an extremely talented singer. But and that definitely carried over. But other than the jump, which we've kind of deduced is pre-recorded, there wasn't any like viral moment. There wasn't a left shark. There wasn't her coming out on a giant robotic lion. There wasn't some dude on a slack line. I'm trying to think. There wasn't, you know, the overt political statement. We don't need to necessarily get into all that, but with, you know, Beyonce with her costumes made anything. It was very just kind of, I'm going to go on the stage, there's going to be lots of lights, and we're going to sing, and there's some kind of cool stuff with these LED things, but nothing really fantastic other than necessarily stuff that seemed to be pre-recorded.
I mean, it was just a regular old Lady Gaga performance, and what's wrong with that? Because she puts on a heck of a show.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You need some AC/DC. Next year, AC/DC playing halftime of the Super Bowl
would be amazing. About to rock.
Also, before we, I know the segment was going a little long, but that's okay, because this is awesome, and it happens once a year, and you actually got to go. Tom Brady, can we just put to rest all arguments about him being the greatest quarterback of all time? I mean, is it pretty much a given now? Can you actually argue that Montana or Elway or Aikman? Well, I don't think anybody was really arguing about Aikman, but or Bradshaw. I mean, can you make that argument that Tom Brady is not better than them?
Yeah, yes, and totally yes, but then also no. Because I think it just depends on what your criteria is. Because a lot of people think Dan Marino might have been one of the best, and you know he never won a ring. And so and the funny thing about it is that everyone kind of wants to use this game to say that Tom Brady is the best, and he played pretty awful for about three quarters of that game.
Yeah, but he played big whenever it counted.
I mean, he did play big whenever it counted, and that certainly overrides a lot of stuff. But it is to be remembered that the first three quarters of that game, he was pretty bad.
Yeah, but you can also make the argument too that the Atlanta defense was playing great, and then they were on the field for so long that eventually he was able to wear them down. When you're looking at that, you can say, well, he's been on great teams, he's had great players around him, which is true. I mean, you don't win a Super Bowl by yourself, but at the same time, he's won four MVP awards out of the five Super Bowls, and he's been able to find his guys, and he's been able to really take some no-name receivers and running backs. I mean, you know, you're talking about Hogan, a guy who was a lacrosse player at college, and you've got some other pieces that are kind of jumbled together, and he's able to make that work. And his performance, I think, should put to rest that he's probably the greatest quarterback of all time.
I want to talk less about Tom Brady being the best quarterback of all time, which...
And more about Giselle.
No. I want to talk more about that catch.
Holy Julian Edelman.
Crap. I mean, we were sitting there, standing there with, 30 or 40 people just in the tunnel on this little TV, and all of a sudden that catch happens. Everybody goes, no way. And yet he managed to somehow snag that catch out of the air just inches from the ground.
I tweeted right after it was confirmed, you know, watching the replay on TV, David Tyree, who? David Tyree?
Yeah, it was...
Because
that is the catch now.
And that's pretty crazy, too, in that it overshadows Julio Jones's catch.
You know, he had like three of them.
Which was amazing. Right. Yeah, I remember it was one amazing catch. I think it was on third and long, maybe. And Matt Ryan, like...
Was that the one over the middle or the one
that was... This was on the sideline.
Yeah. Belichick afterwards on ESPN was saying, you know, he thought he was going to have to pull out his challenge flag. And then all of a sudden he was like, no, that's a pretty good catch,
that's
actually.
That's a catch. But yeah, Julian Edelman, in order to... While all that is going around you and you're flipping and flopping and falling on top of people and you got arms and legs going all over the place, to have the presence of mind to basically take the end of that ball, throw it up again, and then catch it again, And somehow, some way, none of that leather ever touched the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to complete that catch was pretty dang amazing.
Well, the Super Bowl is an experience unlike anything because it is such just the normal football game that you wouldn't expect. And then it's absolutely madness and mayhem to just try to be a part of. So if you have a few dollars, I might suggest going to be a part of it at least once because it's pretty impressive.
I'll just have to wait till it's back in Dallas again.
Yeah.
I'd rather go to Dallas.
It'll probably ice storm, though.
Yeah, it'd be really bad weather.
Yeah. Anyway, that is Super Bowl talk for us. We have a very special guest coming up next. Zach and I went over to the Aggie Softball Complex and had a sit-down conversation with one Keeley Milligan, the left fielder for the Fighting Texas Aggies, to kind of preview their season coming up. Great audio, great interview. She had some great things to say. We did experience a little bit of technical difficulties, as has been the theme of the day. So sorry for the we wanted to try something new here on the My Aggie Nation podcast. So we did the whole interview underwater, or at least it kind of sounds like. So excuse that.
Well, we were technically under the stadium, though.
Sure, it's the same thing.
We were in the bowels of the Aggie softball.
Right.
Complex.
So sorry for that, but great interview, and it's great way to get ready for that Fighting Texas Aggie softball team and season that starts up here this Friday. And that's next on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Live on location. Well, I say live. It's a podcast. It's never really live. But we're live right now. We're visiting with Aggie softball player Keeley Milligan, the Speed Demon, visiting with us. She set the single season record for most stolen bases at Texas A&M as a freshman. So pretty
kind of that happened.
Kind of a big deal. Keeley, first off, well, I was going to ask you this. Did you run track in high school?
I didn't. I only played golf.
Really? Okay. I figured, you know, the coach would be trying to get you to come on the track team with all the speed.
They wanted me to, but it kind of just ran right into softball season, and I was – so,
gotcha. Gotcha. For us as baseball guys growing up, I mean, you know, I watched softball. I had friends that played softball. But slap hitting, I know that's kind of your forte, hitting from the left side. And that's something that's always boggled my mind, that you're able somehow to run towards the pitch while at the same time keeping your head steady enough to where you can make contact.
We had enough trouble just hitting curves.
Yeah. So. I had enough trouble just standing still pretty much and trying to hit the ball. So it's like there's so much to that, and I don't think people really realize that a lot.
Yeah, it's up my head's not always steady, and that's the issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's really just a lot about timing. That's the hardest part, is that, I mean, we come here at practice and we get so many reps that running a ball isn't really a big deal anymore, but it's all about timing. Each pitcher has different things they do, so you have to adjust your timing to each pitcher each game. And I mean, in between a game, they might switch a pitcher in the middle of the game, so it's not crazy to have to switch your timing. And that's just the most difficult part for me, is making sure that I'm on time.
Yeah, so from the team last year, it seems like y'all kept a lot of players. Does that felt like when you come back and done, the fall camp and moved on to spring practice this go around, does it feel like that continuity is still there? Does it kind of just feel like y'all left off from that team that made it to the regionals last year?
Sure, I come back and it's just like the same exact game. We have freshmen that automatically assume roles that we are missing from last year. Of course, you miss a couple players, you know, that you had, like some big personalities, Alex Mosley, Catalina Fear, I mean, everybody, Rudozier, all of them, but, you know, the freshmen are doing a really good job of being confident coming in here and just knowing what their role is and doing a good job.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, too, because even last year, you guys were a really young team. As you talked about, Alex and Callie were really and Bree Dozier were the three seniors, but you guys had so many role players, you just as a freshman, and now coming in, you know, as a sophomore, it's still a pretty young team, but you guys have experience.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All the sophomores, definitely, well, sophomores now, we all played a lot last year, so it makes it a lot easier to not feel so young this year, you know what I mean? Like, we know what to expect. We've been there, we've done that, we've been in big situations. And that's the same, big part of this year's team is going to be the junior class. Because now, I mean, there's no excuse now. They're upperclassmen. They've been in every situation you can think of. And now we're considered kind of an older team, I guess, because we have a lot of juniors to play, and they're all upperclassmen now. So, no excuses this year.
correct me if I'm wrong, in high school and in select ball and stuff, you were a shortstop, right?
Right.
And so now you're playing outfield. You have a season of outfield under your belt, which I'm sure you played some too when you were younger as well. But do you feel like you're getting a little bit more comfortable in that position and that's kind of your position now?
Yeah, I definitely feel more comfortable. I mean, it's difficult, and I'm always going to say I think left field is the most difficult. My other outfielders are going to say otherwise, but I think left field is the most difficult because the ball just really, like, once those right-handers catch that ball, it's, like, flying over your head, like, pretty quick. It's coming off the ball quick, and then coming off the bat quick, and you just got to get back. And I still struggle a little bit with some small aspects of my game, but my coaches and my teammates do a really good job of making sure to let me know what they see that I could improve on. So I definitely feel like I've gotten there.
I was about to say, I saw her play shortstop for the Maroon and White scrimmage. You were flashing the leather pretty well over there, so you still got it. You think Coach is going to let you play short at all throughout this year?
I definitely think I'll be reserved more of a just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case someone's injured or can't play there for the moment. But, you know, that's my role there, and I push people to be better at their position, and I give a little competition, then I'm personally okay with that.
So last year you kind of took the conference and really kind of the country by surprise with your base-stealing abilities and what you're able to do, breaking the school record and everything here. Do you feel any pressure to kind of do that again this year, or do you feel like you have to change it up a little bit because there might be a kind of a book on your base-stealing or anything like that?
Oh, for sure, on both of those. I know that everybody knows exactly what I do, so I think I'm going to have to be a little more reserved maybe this year, which is going to make it a little more difficult to break a record. You know, you have to be more reserved, but more bases is going to come with getting on base more. So I'm really working on certain things like taking more pitches, having better eye at the plate, and I think those small things at the plate will result in more stolen bases.
And you know, I did feature on you last year and talked to you, and you talked a lot about, and something I had actually not heard of. You correct me if I'm wrong, but you watch a lot of video on catchers and kind of get their ticks and what they do to throw the ball down. What is kind of some of the things you look for when you're watching video on a catcher as a base stealer?
Well, I just look in general at how quick she is back there. Does she have a strong arm? I especially look at her throw down in between innings. Does she throw her knees? Does she go all the way to her feet? But a lot of that also mainly goes into the pitcher. Is she a change-up pitcher? Does she throw a lot of wild pitches? You know what I mean? So pitch counts go into that as well. So I like to look at both of those things. They're super important. Also, who's covering the bag? Is it shortstop? Is it second base? Are they quick? Do they have good gloves? Some shortstops get nervous, and you know, you can steal them. Catcher can make a great throw, but they can't pull it off. A lot of times they don't get to the bag in time, so it results in a bobble. So I look at a lot of different things before I go in, and I kind of have, I have my mind made up before I get on base what I'm going to do.
It's like a poker player. Like, she already knows their signs and everything else, like all their tells. That's how she just. And asking a little bit about your teammate, one of your fellow outfielders, whatever, it's early. One of your fellow outfielders out there, Sarah Hudak, I know that, you know, a lot of folks have talked about her, and she didn't like to talk about herself much, but it's a really cool story with her, having played collegiate baseball and now coming over and playing softball. How's she making the transition, and what's she like as a teammate?
Oh, she's amazing. She's a great teammate. She's a great friend in general. Just even besides being a teammate in the locker room, she's a great friend and person to be around. And she definitely doesn't like the attention on her, which is something that makes her awesome. Mm-hmm. Because she is a great athlete. Like, and to be able to transition from, I mean, baseball to softball, like, I think they're completely different sports. Besides just, I mean, some basic things, but I think they're completely different sports. And the tempo's different, all of the speed, all of that. And for her to make that transition and do so well is crazy. The other day, she almost threw someone out from the wall at third base.
Oh, wow.
And it was Kelby, and she's really, really, really
yeah.
big. And everybody was just amazed. I mean, she is so, 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 so strong. You can definitely see some baseball and that she's played with boys in the past, you know? So mm-hmm. She's definitely, like, she's on another level. She's super good.
That's awesome. So we're baseball players. I played a little collegiate baseball, and I know that there is no way to get around the fact that there has got to be a optimum standout prankster on the team. Who is the prankster of the team?
probably Erica. It's probably Erica, but if she has an accomplice or somebody egging her on, that's probably me. I'm more just like that. I don't want to get in trouble, so I'm gonna let you do it, but I'm gonna plant the idea in your head to do it. So
you're like the sidekick to her supervillain. Okay.
Yeah. Or like the devil on her shoulder.
Yeah.
Do it.
For sure. If they need somebody to help them with anything or any type of prank or ideas, they know
what you're... Real quick, is there one in particular that stands out? Did you guys pull off a good one at all?
One prank?
Yeah. There's so many.
Gosh, it's just small little locker room things. Like, they'll come to the locker room and they're like one time they had shin guards in the locker room and they told all the freshmen last year that we had to pick out shin guards to wear. Like, I mean, these are like ugly shin guards from your knees down to your knee.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, you have to wear shin guards. We're like, oh my God, seriously? And they're like, yeah, we're also going to wear shorts this year. And we have a new rule. It's funny because yesterday we have a new rule now that everybody has to wear a chin strap on their helmet.
Really? Okay.
And apparently this was a huge deal and they all swore that I was lying to them and that I was joking with them. Like, no, I'm not. I'm not kidding. I swear some of them still think they're going to show up on game day and not have to wear a chin strap. I wasn't lying. So I was like,
fool me once. Shame on you.
Whatever.
So the next question too in the locker room is, who controls the music?
We have a pre-recorded CD already if we play anything. And it's Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears and NSYNC.
I'm going old school.
There's so much disappointment in their...
It's like, that's music that I listen to. It's like, how old are you guys?
Erica turns it on, and if Erica has anything to do with it, you're not going to be able to hear somebody right beside you talk. All the way up.
Turn up.
Oh my gosh, always. It's like 100.
As opposed to Coach Evans playing Dave Matthews Band all the time. She's a big Dave Matthews.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
Yep.
Okay. The space between. Tailing off of that, if you were in charge of the music, what would be played in the locker room?
Oh my God. They know that it would be probably rap.
Okay.
I always listen to that anyways, but especially before a game, I have my certain little things I listen to. But it's funny because they always make fun of me because we'll pick like a station, like a Pandora station, when we go work out, and I'll always, like, Ray will say, what do y'all listen to? And I'll say, trap rap radio. Like, and they make so much fun of me for it all the time. Like, I have a sign in my room that says trap rap.
Well, Kaylee, thank you so very much for your time. Really do appreciate it. I know you guys are kicking off the season this weekend, so you got to be excited about that, right?
Exactly.
Got to be playing at home in front of everybody, including the Sugar Daddies. You're going to be out there making a lot of noise. Well, Kaylee, we really do appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming by. Guys, that's going to wrap it up for this segment. Coming up next, we keep this bad boy rolling. You're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast.
She didn't come by far. We came here.
Oh, that's right. Well, thanks. Thanks for...
This is the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Yes, we're back. We've come out from our underwater tank of water that we interviewed Kaylee Milligan in, kind of dried off a little bit, and you know, we're back in the warm confines of our podcast mothership here. But we just have to discuss something that was, you know, a pretty significant part of our childhood, I think, for the year that it existed, but mostly because it has resurfaced in the form of a 30 for 30, and that is the XFL.
I think this was one of the best done 30 for 30s, and a lot of it, too, is because you had Dick Ebersol's son was doing it.
Yeah.
He was the guy who directed it, and he's done a ton of great work, and obviously... also pretty close to the situation, the both guys, Dick Ebersol and Vince McMahon. So it was really well done.
Well, it's we'll get into this in a second because yes, for the most part, I think it was okay, but the ending was weird. The ending was
Why
weird.
Why was it so weird?
It was just
because
weird.
Because of Vince McMahon?
the way that they said it, it was just creepy and weird. Well, I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So my main question, the thing that I wanted to bring to the podcast after watching this, now the XFL was the thing that I think I was young enough that once I saw the commercials on the podcast again, I remembered, oh yeah, I remember seeing those commercials on TV. But, you know, I grew up, I was probably, it was 2000, so I was in seventh grade. And I think that was still a time in my family that, that I probably wasn't going to be watching the XFL in my household.
Yeah.
Had that come on.
You were still young and innocent.
Well, and you were younger.
Yeah.
But the going back and actually getting a look at it all and kind of the concept and the idea, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but the thing that really stuck out to me is this is where the gist of the No Fun League first appeared out of the mouth of Vince McMahon, calling the NFL the No Fun League, and that the XFL was going to be the Extra Fun League.
The Extra Fun League.
And it seems that back then, football was still pretty hard-nosed compared to what we have now, mostly, you know, reasonably so because of all the advances they've had in technology of science and understanding brain trauma and concussions and whatnot. But a lot of people, especially even with the celebrations and stuff, have really this No Fun League concept is a legacy of the XFL that has carried on.
Yeah, and FYI, Roger Goodell has not made that any better, that stigma any better than
sure,
the NFL.
Sure. And so because of that thought process, how much that people really, really want to stick to this No Fun League moniker, I really think that if they were wanted to bring the XFL back now, it would be different. It would probably be on a cable channel, you know, probably not like HBO, but, you know, a Spike TV or something like that to start out with, or maybe Fox, Fox Sports 1 or something like that might.
Hopefully it wasn't a Viacom channel, because then a lot of folks around here probably wouldn't get it.
Sure, sure. But I think it would work. That's long story short. I think it would work better now than when they tried to do it, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
17 years ago.
But again, you're living in a time, and you just mentioned you've got all these other channels. This thing was on NBC. This was in prime time. I mean, this was on one of the big three networks. Now, as you were talking about, you'd be putting it on something that was not as popular. You'd be putting on a lesser network, a cable network, that not everybody would get. And folks have so many more options now. Why would they tune into it? You could be like, well, I could either watch this, or I could watch G4 and see people doing these crazy acrobatic whatever.
Because sports programming works. I mean, heck, the XFL could probably do just as good streaming somewhere. Probably better streaming. You know, they're streaming Thursday night, Sunday night games on Twitter and stuff like that. Make a big deal with Twitter or something like that and stream on, because I think more people are streaming now necessarily than have cable. But I look at all the other sports related things like your Last Chance U's on Netflix and documentaries of that sort. I think sports still sells well, and I think that the argument that Vince McMahon was trying to make back then that the NFL is kind of wussy football and we're going to bring football back to what it was, I think that would, whether dumb or not, I think that would resonate way more now in the state of where football is. And I think that there are, here's the other factor. There's two more factors I have in this. One is that they discussed how the players that were playing were still trying to get that NFL deal and were trying to still kind of play it by the book. But there was the one player, he hate me, that really bought into that whole persona of what you had to be a part of the XFL and kind of market yourself that way. And in 2000, that was before social media, Twitter, Instagram, things like that. And I think that there would be plenty of players coming out that would understand. I mean, they're already doing what He Hate Me did back then and what they said he bought into now on Twitter and on social media. And so I think that you would have more players buying into that and buying into wanting to be in the XFL. I also think that with the pervasiveness of college football games around the country, how you can watch just about every team and the news about these players is so much more widespread because the internet now than it was in 2000 and 2001. There's plenty of players that have more household name recognition coming out of college that aren't draft-worthy prospects, but would probably latch on to the ability to continue playing professional football in a league like that. Take, for instance, Johnny Manziel. I think Johnny Manziel would be the poster boy of the XFL. I think that, and if you just think about A&M in the microcosm of A&M, because that's what most people know, guys like a Speedy Noel, who if he doesn't go in the draft and can't maybe get a free agency pickup, there's players like that on every college football team that I think would take the chance of playing in something like the XFL over going to Canada.
Well, when you look at it from a talent perspective, though, how much does it differ from Canadian football and arena football? I mean, those are guys who weren't able to quite cut making it to the NFL roster, but yet they're playing on lesser leagues that don't get any pub, at least
not
around here.
Sure, but it's not just about football, too. It's about that entertainment, and it's about that entertainment value, that reality TV kind of value. And I think that in some instances, that's what even professional normal football coverage has turned into a little bit in the sports world. I think
We've seen that. You've got guys with personalities, guys much like Martellus Bennett. You mentioned him earlier. Tom Brady, for his personality, would be a great fit, I think. He's kind of the heel in a lot of ways. But, I mean, you've seen him being able, especially during a suspension, via social media and Facebook and things like that. Then you saw the commercial that he had with the different rings and stuff.
Sure.
And a jab at Roger Goodell. That would be something that you can embrace. But, again, you're not going to get those kind of talented guys. So you can't put all your eggs in the actual football basket.
Sure, but what I'm trying to say too is that just like what you said, the players are more they talked about some of the coaches and stuff that actually coached the XFL.
Yeah.
Were guys in this documentary were guys that were trying to continue their career up it to where that they might get the look of one of the NFL teams or another opportunity, maybe a major college program. And so none of them wanted to do anything non-traditional because they were viewing their time in the XFL as a job interview for future, the next step. And you had to have that total buy-in. Well, and to vary from what traditional football was then, I think football and the way football is covered and the way players do endorsements and things now is vastly different from 2000. For instance, the Tom Brady thing, these commercials that poke fun at things that happen on the field, how big the Roger Goodell Tom Brady storyline is. I could be off base here, but I don't think that would have been as pervasive of a storyline, not only in the media and the articles and the TV, but also in advertisements and just all these different kinds of media back in 2000. It would have been more of just about the football on the game, on the field.
Maybe so. You know, there's been plenty of times when you've seen these kind of conflicting relationships within upper management, not just in the league, but you're talking about coaches and players. Things of that sort that have gotten plenty of pub. You know, let's go to baseball, for instance. You know, Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin back in the 70s. I mean, that's something that has drawn a lot of publicity and a lot from the media and fans alike. I think today it would be magnified 100-fold because you've got social media and things with people talking along with more sports radio and things like that. But I can't see the pull for it. And you made mention of it earlier, too, as far as the physical toll that it might take and the different things that the NFL has done to make the game safer. And you see examples like Junior Seau and these other guys that where the physical toll has really done a number on them mentally and physically. And you see the outcome of that. Why would guys want to risk it? Why would they want to go to the XFL where it has fewer rules?
That is the biggest question mark of it all. And I would venture to guess that first off, the other another factor in all this too is the fact that I think that there's after its death, there's something that has kind of become the XFL has kind of had this cult following. It's kind of become cooler than it actually was, looking back on what it was trying to be. And I think if you have some of these players that come out of college that are really, really, really wanting a chance, if you give them a chance to say that they are a professional athlete, it's one of those deals that you have to tell them, like, listen, this is what you're signing up for. Yes, there are health risks and there are things that, you know, the Players Association and the NFL are bargaining with the NFL to try to prevent. But if you're going to play in the XFL, if you're going to get this chance to actually play pro ball, you understand the risks. And I'm always one of those kinds of people that especially having the outlet of the NFL out there that is going to do things right in terms of the medically for the players. If you want to sign up, to skydive, you understand that there is a risk that your parachute might not work.
Well, yeah, but you got to take all the precautions for that. With the XFL, you wouldn't be taking all the precautions for that. Even though you talked about it would be different now if they were to start something like that than it was in the past, and that very well could be a big part of it.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is you would have to have players that are signing up to say, I understand the risks, and I still want to take part in this. And I argue that there would be enough players that would take that. Now, it might just be for 1 year. The rosters might roll over with a fresh batch of college kids who didn't get drafted just about every year. And that's, you know, could be problematic, but I think there would be enough people to sign up and do it every
year. No matter what you do, I think it's always going to be a stepping stone for the NFL, and you made mention of it with the coaches that, you know, wouldn't be these larger-than-life, basically wrestling characters that Vince McMahon was so used to having, and what would make the XFL so different, you know, and Jesse Ventura as going on the field and he's talking trash to one of the coaches, you know, and getting in fights and things like that. Those guys aren't going to do that because they are expecting, you know, how's that going to draw the attention of the NFL? Is the NFL going to be like, oh, well, he was just playing around? Whenever he comes to the NFL, he'll get his act straight. Same thing with players.
Well, it depends. It's a different climate in the NFL too about how you market your players. And the funny thing is, and this segues into kind of how we started all this, talking about the way the documentary ended, and that is having Vince McMahon, and I just forgot his name, the NBC
executive. Dick Ebersol.
Dick, yeah, sitting at a table in present time by themselves, eating a meal, talking about you know, what kind of went wrong. And they both said, it would be cool to try this again. How would we do this differently? And he said, well, it needs to be tied in with the NFL. You need to have the support of the ownership or the NFL, basically maybe making it kind of like
a D-League.
And
like NFL Europe was.
Right. And the funny thing they mentioned, and he was a big part of the he was a significant part of the documentary, is that Jerry Jones was really on board with the XFL. He might not have said it back then, because you couldn't have with how many shots that the XFL was taking at the NFL, but Jerry Jones was on board with the marketing genius that Jerry Jones is, was on board with what the XFL was trying to do. And I think if you could get someone like Jerry Jones involved too, and really make it an incentive to players to that it could be a stepping stone into the NFL, it could work. I think then if you do tie it in with the NFL, then that's when it can't be quite as XFL-y as you wanted it to be.
I tell you what, this is an idea that I have. If Vince McMahon were somehow able to either buy or come into some kind of conglomerate with Arena Football. I mean,
yeah, but Arena Football is it's too gimmicky. It's not there's a difference between taking football and changing some of the rules around to make it more exciting, and also, but then putting it in arena, making it 50 yards. It's a different game.
Well,
I think
no,
that's
it
why
is,
I didn't.
But you still see guys like Kurt Warner, I think, is the number one that comes to mind. Guys who have gone to the Arena League and have been able to parlay that. I know he played at NFL Europe for some time too, but have been able to parlay that into successful NFL careers, because I just don't think. If you come out with something like the XFL and you're going head-to-head with Canadian football and you're going head-to-head with Arena Football as the number two to the NFL, I just don't think it's going to work. But if you were able to combine two of those, I think you would have a legitimate shot at making it work.
Yeah, possibly. I don't think the Arena League is competition, because I think it's something related but completely different. I don't know that it caught on super well.
Well, it didn't, because they tried that, and I know that they signed a big deal, I think, with CBS, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was NBC, where they tried to have a weekly arena football league, and it just didn't work. And up in Dallas, they had the Dallas Desperados.
Mm-hmm.
And I know AMC a couple of years
ago. That was directly
ago,
tied. It was owned by Jerry Jones, tied with the team.
Yeah, and, you know, you had a couple of years ago on AMC, they had the LA Kiss. That was bought by KISS out in Los Angeles.
I think that still
exists.
They
had all this stuff. And so I understand that part of it, but if you have a backer like Vince McMahon with the kind of money that he has, and you're also able to the off-the-field stuff when it comes to setting up these personalities and being larger than life, would it not just make sense that those two would go together? I mean, does it have to be a 100-yard long field
I think
for
it
you
does.
In order to believe it's...
I think well, not for me. I liked arena football, but I think for the average football fan, the other thing too that they mentioned in that story that I think would be key to is getting into markets that are big but don't have football. One of the guys, they had a fan on there from Las Vegas who was just so excited that they finally
had a
Las Vegas football team. So some of these markets that don't, San Antonio might be a hotbed for a team like this that's been itching for Oklahoma City. Might be, you know, some of these
a
bigger
place that might
cities.
Not have a football stadium, but might have an arena that you could put it in. Is that what you're saying?
Stop it.
I'm
stop
just saying,
it.
Man. If Vince McMahon took over the Arena Football League, I think that would be a match made in heaven, and I think the Arena Football League would be bigger than it's ever been.
It's an interesting thought. The last thing that I want to talk about too, though, is the thing that I found the most fascinating, the things that I wasn't thinking about when I was in seventh grade and this was going on, is some of the legacies that the XFL left.
A lot of big stuff.
That really and truly, the way that that fans watch and experience the NFL now came from the XFL.
Yeah.
The Skycam model that was invented by the XFL. I mean, having the players mic'd, having the whole NFL films kind of thing is a tamed version of what the XFL was trying to do and get this behind-the-scenes look of what's going on the sidelines.
And the crazy thing when they had the guy with the camera that was running behind the players.
Sure.
That was pretty nutty.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely something they haven't not incorporated into the NFL. But it was interesting to hear Jerry Jones, a part of that documentary, talking about how innovative the XFL was and how important the XFL was for the year that it existed in making the NFL product what it is today. And even Vince McMahon admitted to that, yeah, I mean, I guess that is some form of flattery for what we did, that basically the way that you watch football on TV now on the NFL for the NFL is what we were trying to do with the XFL, just not as, not as risque.
And I think this 30 for 30 put down any thoughts and put to rest any questions about Bob Costas being a pompous, arrogant ass, because he came off as the biggest turd in this 30 for 30. He really did. You can understand how the whole thing, the idea in Vince McMahon was shallow, and it was kind of degrading, and you know, you might not agree with it, but Bob Costas is just sitting there with his air of superiority talking about how terrible it is, and it's a detriment to the game, and da-da-da-da-da, or detriment to him, and he didn't want any part of it.
Well, and
dude, live a little, man.
It was a weird conflict of interest to put him in that situation where he felt, with this XFL being on his network, and being this... And especially with the way that it was promoted. They kept talking. They didn't know what it was going to be until they actually kicked the game off what the rules were going to be. How risque was it going to be? How scripted was it going to be? They didn't know until they kicked that first ball off. And so, of course, Bob Costas didn't know. And he was trying to maintain some level of credibility. So while, yes, it was kind of petty of him, the way that he kind of talked about it, especially that interview that he did.
Well, that was
a
mistake on NBC's part.
That was a mistake on it, because that is just... That just screams conflict of interest for what he's trying to do as a journalist for this league that isn't – you're not quite sure if it's real or not. So, yeah.
Well, Bob Costas with his little soapbox half times already just kind of rubs me the wrong way. But, yeah, overall I thought it was a fantastic 30 for 30, and it was something that I was really young too. I was 10, I guess, whenever it came out. So it was one of those things I vaguely remember – maybe seeing a game or two with my rabbit ears, you know, mm-hmm. Hanging out in my room. But it's really cool just seeing all the ins and outs of something that behind the scenes, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that will wrap up XFL talk.
XFL!
On the My Aggie Nation podcast. Big thanks to Keely Milligan for jumping on, getting into that submarine that we did the interview on, and... It was really hard to get that thing out to the Aggie softball complex. But big thanks to her for jumping on the show and breaking down some of the Fighting Texas Aggie softball team season that starts up this Friday. We'll be back next week. We'll be talking baseball. We'll be talking basketball, most likely. And we will be talking probably some softball as well, as that is getting kicked off over there at the Aggie softball complex. So... Until then, for Zach Taylor, I am Travis Brown. We'll see you next week on the My Aggie Nation podcast.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Just wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Just wanna make sure that we'll be